Welcome to the Mostly Skateboarding Podcast. I'm your host, Templeton Elliott, and I'm joined this week by Mike Munzenrider and Jason from Frozen and Carbonite to chat with Sam McGuire about his new book. Hi, babe. It's me, you. Sam, thanks so much for being on the show. What makes right now the right time to release this book?
Well, that's a great question. Thanks for having me, guys, first off.
Yeah, I guess the timing was random, to be honest. Like, we've been working on it for about a year, and it just took a long time to kind of go through everything, and then we were laying it out. And I love photo books, but I really love stories behind stuff, and I didn't want to put out a book that was like, I'm not that good at being like, check out me and my art and my process and like all that sort of stuff. And so I was trying to figure out, I mean, I guess the backstory, this publisher called Paragon Books had approached me, and they had done some stuff with Jeff Chung and Marby, and they had connected me with them, and they were like, we think the skating stuff would be a really good coffee table book. And I'd always wanted to do a book, and so it kind of aligned. And then as we were diving into the book, it was like, well, I would love to have some text in there, but I don't want it to be like a heavy read. So it kind of took a bit of time just to figure out how to format it. So it wasn't, I guess, just a book of photos. That felt like maybe a lot of work for like a book of photos, you know? And then maybe typing stuff was going to take forever. And so when we were talking, it was like, I think it'd be cool to have a book that kind of talked about the process of like becoming a skate photographer, because it's just like a pretty insane career, and kind of like how it happens. And then kind of at the time, I was kind of struggling with this breakup, and I was like in with this therapist, and she was having me like write letters to myself, like my younger self, to kind of like build myself back up. And Sean is the guy who laid the book out, and I was like, well, what if we did like younger letters to my like beginner photo self? And the book was kind of like a treasure I'd found in the future, you know? And it was like, hey, everything's gonna be fucking sick and like really cool. And so in the book, there's like three letters that kind of look like they were like left in the book, like a little treasure, like bookmark. And then I guess that combined, last year was like a weird year, I feel like, for a lot of artists. Like, the work got really slow. A lot of friends were like struggling with like what they were doing and sort of where their career was going. So I guess all of that together kind of felt like, okay, if we kind of frame it under that, and then it's maybe like talking about the struggles of stuff, and we can kind of donate all the money to the Ramers Foundation. It just kind of aligned and felt like a fun way to just talk about, I guess, sort of like the struggles of being a photographer. I mean, it's not like, it's three letters. It's not like that much text, but yeah, I guess if any of that makes sense.
It did, yeah. Is it, does the work span about, I'm trying to guesstimate, 20 years or so? Does that sound plausible? 18, 20 years?
Whoa.
There's some like old Iowa stuff in there that...
There is, and it feels... Yeah, I think it does, because I guess... Yeah, probably 20 years. Wow, that's really crazy, actually. I didn't even think of that. But yeah, it was kind of... It was just like a retrospective. It truly was just like from the therapist being like, you should look back on your life and be proud of how far you've come. And then that kind of sparked... It kind of timed out. Like, I was doing that, and then they hit me up about doing the book, and it was like, okay... And so it's kind of in sections, like the beginning, and then there's kind of like the middle bit where it was like moving out to LA, and moving out here was such a bizarre journey in itself. And then kind of like, it's weird because like, you know, you kind of, it's just like skating, like you get on flow and then you become like an am. And then like, you know, there's like these tiers you get to that just take forever, and they're weirdly frustrating, and you have all these like ups and downs. And I guess then that was like the middle bit, and then the last bit was like, okay, I feel like I kind of quote like made it, or I was like working consistently and doing all these like really cool jobs, you know. And like I think it was like me coming out was weirdly
the sort of like inspiration for all that. It was strange. Like I kind of thought that things would get really quiet, or I don't know, I was just gonna like pivot into commercial stuff, but then kind of it got really busy and people like wanted to go on tour and it was like the opposite. So that's a little bit of the book where it's like the third part is like where I thought my career was over, but it kind of just like skyrocketed and in ways I had no idea. So kind of the energy of the book, you know, is like the beginning sort of struggles, middle figuring it out, and then it kind of is like, okay, here you're like actually doing it, you know?
Yeah. Along those lines, are the photos in the book kind of organized into those three sections, or how did you go about kind of like curating everything?
Yeah, it's like they're separated by those letters, and then yeah, like the photos in the beginning are from like the beginning of me picking up a camera, and then it's kind of me talking about like how I started like submitting pictures or even like trying to do that. And then the middle part was talking about, you know, like how I started working with the skateboard mag and kind of trying to figure out how to go from like submitting stuff to like living off of the skate photography. And then I got hired at Etnies. And so the middle part kind of like is that and a lot of Etnies stuff. And then the end part is maybe a bit towards the end of Etnies when I was doing a lot for Red Bull, and then a lot with like, I mean, there was a point, I mean, when I came out, it was just like, I was working with everybody, not, you know, like, ooh, I'm the coolest person ever, but it just started to be all these people I wanted to work with seemed to just be down to work with me. So the third part is kind of like more, and the beginning's black and white, I think, or mostly black and white. And then it kind of, it's like the idea is like the book gets like more colorful and like lively as it goes, you know what I mean? To just kind of show like a little bit of a career trajectory and energy.
So I'll go full disclosure. Sam and I have, I don't know, we were roommates a long time ago. And then every now and then from there in Minneapolis, Sam's from Iowa originally. I honestly don't know, though, like, your actual photographer origin story, because for a while there, Sam was just a ripping skater, as some folks don't know. I remember I ran into Marby Slow Impact, or someone was like, hey, Marby, this little dude knows Sam, and so I'm like, oh, yeah, Sam ripped. And but, yeah, just like, what was the origin story? Because, like, for a time there, I want to say it was like 2003, maybe? We were all living in South Minneapolis. We had a house for 9 months, and you went back to Iowa.
Yeah, it was so cold. Oh, my God. I lived in Minneapolis for, like, a year, which is funny because everyone thinks I'm from Minneapolis. And I think I was there less than a year. And that winter was so brutal. I was like, I can't. I'm going to go back to Iowa. I'm going to go back to school. And I really wanted to be... Do you know who Martin Scholler is? He's like a famous, you'd know his work for sure. He does a lot of like really close-up portraits now. Like he did the Colin Kaepernick like really close-up portrait. That was the Nike campaign like everywhere. Every Time cover that's like really well lit and like very close, it's him. But he used to do all these really, really fun editorial portraits of like celebrities. And at the time, you know, like magazines were huge and you could be this like high-rolling editorial photographer making like tons of money, and it just seems so cool to me. So I went back to school because all my friends were in Iowa City going to school, and you know, Minneapolis was like freezing, and it was like really expensive compared to Iowa, which is laughable now, but like it was so insane because Iowa is like so cheap. And then I went to Minneapolis and was like, whoa, this is nuts. Like beer was so expensive, rent was so expensive. So I went back to like study, and then I was kind of, my friend Mike Steenerson was shooting a lot of skate photos, and I was like, oh, that seems like a really cool way to kind of learn photography, because at the time the standards were nuts. Like you had to shoot on Hasselblad, everything had to be lit, and I just wanted to like shoot a cool skate photo. Like it was with film and all that stuff, it was like technically pretty difficult. And I just was like, Mike, teach me how to do this. and I just want to get like a cool skate photo. And then it kind of just turned into this like obsession because there was such a trial and error. You know, you had to like shoot and get the film developed, or I was like developing it myself and like a flash wouldn't go off. You know what I mean? It was like to get a picture right took like months. It was so maddening. And I didn't have like a ton of money for all this good gear. So it was like all duct taped together. And at the time you had to have like pocket wizards and all this stuff that like never worked. And I just was like, oh, I just want to get one cool picture. And then like I got a cool picture and I was like, oh, I want to get like one picture ran in a magazine. And then I was just like taking pictures and was just trying to think of where I could send photos. Because at the time, no one was really doing like, you know, story photos. It was all like gnarly pros and no one was living in Iowa. And there like wasn't, there was some really, really good skaters, but it just wasn't, it was different then. Like you really had to have a name. I just wanted to get a picture. And also it was fun shooting. Skaters are like fun to shoot. They're kind of like peacocky, you know, they like kind of like the camera, kind of hate it. They kind of like attention. They kind of like fucking with people. So it was like, I was out skating. It was fun shooting them. And then I was in school and I was like, okay, I'll like keep going to school. And then that's when I like submitted some stuff to the skateboard mag, and then it just kind of turned out like Kevin Wilkins lived in Lincoln and he called me. And dude, I was talking about this when I did the book signing thing, and it's so funny to like look back on. It's psycho, but like I used to send them like full layouts, you know what I mean? Like I would like get the picture and I would like lay it out, because I like worked at this ad agency in the school I was going to, and we had like all the highest tech stuff at the time. And I would like lay it out and I would like pick the font I thought would be cool. And I would like, I literally would send them like a CD with the file on it. I would send them like a printed PDF. I would be like, here's what I think it could look like, and it would be really cool for this section. It was like so over the top. And I think Kevin called me to just be like, who the fuck are you? Like, what? This is like the weirdest submissions. And we just talked for a while, and I don't know, it was like fun. That chase was fun. And so I just kept like chasing, and like, you know, you guys were like skating a ton in Minneapolis, and like Nesser was up there, and I was always trying to like position myself to get like a photo with Steve, because I was like, oh, I bet if I get a photo with Steve, like it could get run, and then maybe I could like stay in the Midwest and like shoot all these pros and whatever. So I was like up there just getting a bunch of photos with you guys. And then I just, anyone in the Midwest, I would like call Kevin and be like, dude, give me their number like right now. And then Malto had like an ad come out and it mentioned something about Kansas City. So I was like, oh, give me Sean's number. Like I'm gonna like drive down and shoot some pictures. And so then I just was like going to KC all the time. And it kind of was a mix. Like Eric Fletcher lived in Cedar Rapids too, and he was like home every now and again.
Former flip rider, right? And before that, he was on Girl Flow, I want to say.
Yeah, and he rode for Etnies as well.
He was like a guy that like was always about to pop, but never quite did.
Yeah, it was really, I feel so bad for him, because I feel like it was such a string of like bad luck. Like I feel like he would have someone that's like, all right, we're gonna like put out this part that you have, and then like the person that was like pushing him would like go to another company, you know what I mean? And then right, he would be like, okay, well I have all this stuff, and like, you know, he was like on Quicksilver and he was like so good. I mean, he's still really good, but it was, he just was like always on tour. He was like a little bit of this like child prodigy, but he didn't skate in contests, which I feel like kind of made him like a little bit more elusive and cool. And yeah, it was like, he was the next thing. But I mean, you all know, like there's so much marketing in skating. There was just something that was like, you know, if it were a jackpot and there's like the third seven that would like release the funds to like his marketing campaign, it just never hit that last one. It was a weird time too, where I think it was the beginning of like people advocating for like their own marketing. You know what I mean? I think before, when I got into it, it was kind of like companies were like, here's this person, you just skated, whatever. And then when I kind of got in, I feel like people were a lot more active in their careers and like having meetings at these places. And you know what I mean? Like kind of being more there. And Eric was just so, I just feel like he would skate and chill. I don't think he loved the like meetings and that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? I could talk about Eric forever. I love Eric.
What ended up being the actual breakthrough? Like, do you remember the particular photo where it got printed and there's the one?
Well, there was the one of Tulio that was like him skating in the snow. It was like a sequence. But honestly, no, it was a very slow start. I think the breakthrough was Malto's New Jack, which was like an interview that the skateboard mag used to do. And up until then, I was a little manipulative in that I was like, I know that I can't like provide them with a name or like with some crazy trick. Like Nick Riley, I was shooting with a lot, or Jackson in Iowa, and they were doing like really big stuff, but it was like I would send stuff and I could just tell that it wasn't like a known spot or something like that. And so they had all these articles that were like, I forget the name, but like it was one on a shop or it was like a contest. Oh, I would like pitch myself, oh, let me go shoot this contest. And like I remember I would see like Rodent or Jeff Landy or like Brian Ueda, who are all like staff photographers, and we'd be at a contest and I'd be like, oh my God, I'm so stoked. Like I get to shoot this contest. And they'd be like, dude, I'm so psyched you want to do this, because I fucking hate shooting these. And I was like, oh my God, well, this is so cool. Like, could you imagine hate shooting these? And like now there's not a chance I would do it. But I kind of was just trying to weasel my way in the back door and try to make friends with like Grant and Swift and Kevin by like just doing, you know, they have to fill those pages. So I was just pitching them all the time. Like, dude, there's like a driveway with a quarter pipe and they're going to do an event. Like we should, I'll drive to Cincinnati for a day and like, we'll shoot photos. And then there was one contest, I think Top Shop. Yeah. Kevin was like, he said something. He was like, dude, me and Swift were talking, like your photos have gotten so much better. And I was like, oh shit. And then that's when I met Malto and like we shot the New Jack stuff. And it felt like that was maybe the first time it was like, maybe they were like, oh, he could do other stuff. And then at the time they were like getting on Etny. So it really like timed out, because dude, all this weird stuff timed out. Like he was like gone. I don't remember. We ended up like shooting these photos and dude, I had never shot like tricks that gnarly, like ever. It was so nerve wracking. Cause
with
like
Malto.
Yeah. I was like, dude, I don't even know if my equipment like works. And he like backside noseblunt slid this giant rail. And I just was like, I don't even think I've probably saw Chad do one at Third Layer, but I'm like, dude, I don't even think I've seen someone do this like in real life, you know? Like no one was that good. I don't know. You know what I mean? I was like, I don't even know what to do. I don't even know how to shoot this. So I was like panicking.
Dude, I've been in that situation. Like I was a filmer, and the first time I went out, I was filming with Heath Kirchart and Steve Barra, and it was just like I've never filmed anything this gnarly, and like I really can't fuck it up with these guys, you know? Like
totally.
So I feel you.
Yeah, it was just like, and he did it and I panicked and I shot it, and in my head you'd shoot it like right when they locked into the rail, and he got over it, and I don't know, I remember to this day I like flinched and I literally thought that he wasn't even in the frame. Like I flinched that hard and I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And it was
so
like,
did you have to wait until the film got processed?
No, because it was right. Grant, like, dude, Grant was so good to me. And like, I would bug him with so many dumb questions and he would always entertain me. And I would send him links like, what do you think of this lens? And what do you think of that lens? And he was like, honestly, go digital. Like, don't spend any more money on Hasselblad stuff. Like, get into digital, because like, by the time you're kind of like in it, you know, in a few months or a year, it's gonna be okay. And so I had the digital camera, but I didn't want to look. I was like, oh my God. And everyone was like freaking out, you know? And I was like, oh my God, dude, like, this is my worst nightmare. I wish it was film, because then I could go back and be like, oh, the lab like fucked it up. Oh my God, like these are the worst people ever, you know? But it was like, we're all cheering. It was on a Sunday. No one was outside. It was like a bunch of skaters. It was beautiful. Like the sun was setting. And I was like, I'm about to ruin this entire moment by like hitting play on this fucking camera. And everyone's going to be like, what? And like literally everyone crowds around and I'm like sweating and hit play. And it was like the photo that was the opening spread was like a portrait I took of him and his old dog. And then that photo. But it was like, whoa, I think that was like the first time that it was like, whoa, you know, that's cool. And then they were like trying to get me on Etney's trips. And I think like that spread and like I had another photo, I think, in there, like, you know, that stuff really helped. And then that, so I think that was probably the moment that it was like, okay, there's like momentum, I guess. Or I felt like I could call them or like, I think every artist has that moment where you go from like being a little bit of like a weird outsider to now you're like, it's like you go from like a flow box to like, hey, can you send me a box? And they're like, oh yeah, yeah, I'll send you stuff. You know, it's like a little bit more of a working relationship. And then if I wasn't annoying them at that, before that, I definitely was annoying the shit out of them. Like probably pitched them something like anything that came to my head. You know what I mean? This would be cool.
What was young Malto like back then?
Honestly, like pretty similar. He was a bit quieter, but he was just, I mean, still so good. It was crazy. And it was really crazy because like, it was watching him kind of like maybe, you know, he would go to LA and Iowa City is only like 2-3 hours or so from KC. So I would go all the time. And it was like, he would go to LA and come back and it would just be like a different person. You know what I mean? He would just be like the tricks. It was crazy to watch. And he was the best. Like his family's amazing. He like loves that city. It was such a fun vibe. Cause like there were so many spots and like Ryan Lovell lives there. We just had a crew and like we would go out skating and it was, you know, you could tell like he was blowing up and it was just like super fun. You know, he loved being in KC. He like loved that there was stuff to do and he didn't have to like be in LA, you know, like, so it was just kind of like a fun, and the city's fun. You can like party in and you can ride bikes everywhere. You know, it was one of those like fun, carefree moments before everyone's life. It's like a Stand By Me moment, you know, where you're like, that's the summer that nothing was ever the same again. But like, we would just skate and get drunk and ride bikes and like throw shit at cars and then like shoot ads and be stupid little kids, you know.
Seems like that's kind of when, I don't know, you know, like the high scene output moments where, you know, you got a dude who's really sparking it, but then there's a bunch of other people doing creative stuff, skating well, propping the shop, you know. It seems like a very fun time there.
Yeah, it was super fun. And then, like, you know, no one, like, knew of me. You know, I think Lovell had done a bunch of stuff, but also, like, you know, he had done some videos. And I don't know, there just wasn't, like, a ton of pressure because it's, like, you're getting great stuff of Sean. He's such a good filmer. We're shooting good photos. And it's almost like, not shocking everybody, but a little, you know, they're like, wait, you're getting all this in Kansas City? That's so sick. And you're like, yeah. Yeah, if that makes sense. It wasn't like, hey, we're going to give you 20 grand to go to like China. It was just like, we were just sending stuff. And Sean was like, dude, he like would skate so much. It was insane. He was so driven and he would film and shoot so much stuff that I think it was like, yeah, there was just like a bunch of stuff coming out and it was just like it seemed to flow. And then none of that stuff lasts, and it's not bad that it doesn't last, you know what I mean? But it's like then it kind of like the, what was it, like the Malto age, or I forget what it was, like in the girl stuff, and it kind of like ramped up and everyone like moved out to LA and kind of like I started working at Etney's and it just kind of changed in a really cool way. But it was those like early moments were like so fun. We were like sleeping at a skate house called the Dunn House and there was like 8 bedrooms. And dude, Sean used to like just sleep on the floor or like in his suitcase. We would just like skate and get drunk and like 20 people would be at the house. You know what I mean? It was like everyone was rich, but like
not. You know what I mean? Like, nothing mattered. You're just like, fuck it, I'll get Chipotle. Like, as if that was like the most insane flex, you know?
It was sick.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of a, like, I just have like a similar experience with that, like, as a filmer. And just like, I was making $1,200 a month, and that was like, you know, all of my needs were met. Like, I didn't have a care in the world, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Go out, film clips, and there's money in the bank, and just have fun. And it was amazing.
Yeah, I think I might have last. I wasn't on retainer at this time, but I think on average, I was probably getting like $500 a month off like ads and stuff. And I was like, that was also like, I was in school and I was working. And so I just felt filthy rich. My rent was like, I mean, I was cheap. My rent was like a few $100, you know, like I probably ate like the worst food. I just felt like I had so much money. It was so chill. And you're like, oh, I'll just go to KC and we'll like eat a bunch of pizza and like sneak a bunch of beers into bars and like shoot a bunch of ads. And then also it's like the weather, you know, like the weather is terrible. Well, it was like 5 or 6 months out of the year. So there was just this like really, it was horny,
yeah.
You know, like April through like October, you were just like, let's fucking do stuff. Cause then October comes and you're like, well, I'm not gonna, you know? So it was just like, I think there maybe was like one or two sort of spring, summer, falls where it was like, fuck yeah, you know? And then maybe it was like 2007, we went out to LA and stayed with Mikey and kind of did the LA thing. Then I ended up like randomly shooting a cover of him. And that was like my senior year. And that kind of was like facilitated the Etnies thing. Then things kind of started to get real for everybody where it was like, wait, shit, like, it's really fun. This can't last. I'm going to graduate. And like, I could stay in Iowa, but it feels like there's stuff happening like other places. You know what I mean? And then, you know, it's like that real life comes on where it's like, well, probably have to like go for it.
So you moved to LA, you worked for Etnies. And was it, when did you come out? 2014-ish?
Like publicly or to like people here?
Well, because was kind of the public move, was a Jankum interview. Am I remembering correctly?
Yeah, that was like, I think 2000, I could look it up.
It was 2014. Yeah. 2014. I read it just, you know, in preparation.
The professional podcaster there.
Yeah.
But I had like come out, I mean, that was like, I'd probably come out like 4 years before that to like certain people, you know, like I had watched like football with Davis and like his now wife with my ex, you know what I mean? Like I was kind of like towing the line. I don't know what I was doing. It was weird, you know, but like it was kind of like a circle new and then that circle like kind of grew and then it just got really tiring. Like it was just weird. Like I kind of told everyone that I was like comfortable with and that I didn't think would like have some exhausting conversation about it. And then I don't know, it was a mix. Like I was talking to my friend Cameron who like lives in Sydney and was like, dude, I think I'm, cause Ian was like bugging me. Oh, it's kind of a long story. I don't know how long I should ramble. I feel like I'm talking so much.
That's the point. You're kind of the main subject. So keep talking.
I did this interview with Hillary Thompson for Jankum, and I told Hillary that I was gay because Hillary was really like not wanting to talk to anybody. And then Ian
at Jankum,
I could tell Ian, yeah, Ian was like getting a little cagey, and I was like, motherfucker, he thinks I'm like stealing this story from him. Because Hillary was like, I don't want anyone to interview me. Like, I'm down if you interview me, but like, I want to make sure because I've had press in the past and it didn't feel good. So then I was like, oh, I really don't want to come out to Ian because he like knows all these people in the industry and like, whatever. I just don't want to deal with it. And then I could tell he was like getting tripped out. And I was like, dude, I'm gay. And he was like, well, fuck, dude, that was like really tripping me out. I thought you were like stealing the story. And I was like, no, she just like doesn't want to talk. She'll like talk to me because I'm gay. But like she doesn't want to talk to like a bunch of straight dudes about transitioning. And I just like thought her story was so fucking cool. And I kind of feel bad. because, like, I don't know if feeling bad's the right word, but I was like, I just thought she was so sick, and it was such an important story, and maybe there was a bit of me in the story that I wanted to tell, and, like, I just was like, I'm gonna fly to North Carolina, let's do this interview. She was, like, super down, and I felt a little selfish, like, hopefully she was psyched on everything as well, but, like, I just wanted to see that so bad that I was, like, forcing it to happen almost to see, like, how are people going to react? Like, can I come out after this, you know? And then the article came out, and Ian, like, wrote me a message or something and was like, so, like, do we talk about you or are we just going to, like, leave that? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And he was just like, well, whenever you want to talk, like, I'm down. And if you ever want to, like, do something, I think it could be, like, really, like, I, whatever. Like, I think there, we have an audience for it. And I think it would just be really cool. And I was like, all right. I don't know if I want to, like, you know, it was like people knew and some team managers knew, like, the magazine didn't know. I don't think Etnies knew. And I just was like, this feels tiring. But then I was, like, with Cameron one night and told him about it, and he was like, dude, you should do it, like, everyone loves you, we've all got your back. And, like, it was like him, Austin Gillette, like, there was a whole crew that we would always meet up when he was in town, and they were all like, oh my god, you should do it, you know, like, that'd be sick. And I was just like, all right, yeah, fuck it.
I mean, was it kind of like, I think you mentioned, you know, you thought your work would be gone after you came out. Was it kind of that, like, growing support and just kind of like, actually, that'd be rad, like, don't be afraid? I mean, it's not much of a question, but just, yeah, trying to, and, you know, kind of boil, you know, it down.
I mean, I don't know how to I did the Hillary thing also as, like, I don't want to sound, like, pretentious, but, like, I had these goals that I wanted to do, and I was like, I could move, I don't need to be in LA, I've, you know, shot all these pictures that I'm proud of, and I got a cover, and there's a lot of politics and all that. And I was like, I'm getting a little tired of kind of navigating it. And, like, Etnies was cool, but it was kind of, you know, I was like, at the time, maybe, like, I was, you know, like, Oliver was, like, the principal photographer there, and I love Oliver to death. Like, I mean, no, nothing bad by this, but, like, he got the good stuff. You know what I mean? If they went to Japan, he would go. If they went to, like, Orlando, I would go. And I don't know, I was just like, okay, I'm kind of getting somewhere with this, but I think I was, like, down to quit, to be honest. So I was like, whatever, I kind of am over it. I also, like, dated this dude for a few years and, like, wasn't out, and it just seemed torturous to, like, do that. I just met someone new and was like, I don't really want to put that person through this. Like, it doesn't seem fair to, like, do that. And I know people, you know, there's all sorts of reasons to do it, but I just was like, I really like this guy, and I don't want to, like, I don't want to have him be my friend and, like, you know what I mean, and just, like, go through that when it's me. It's like, I'm fine, I'm safe, my parents will deal with it, you know what I mean? It just was like, this isn't fair. And then I was like, maybe it'll be a cool story, or maybe it'll, like, help someone. I had a good career. I'm gonna, like, date this guy, try to do studio fashion stuff and actually make money for once, and then, like, move on with my life. You know what I mean? That was kind of, like, my mindset. It was cool when everyone was, like, supportive, because then I was like, well, I have friends in skating that I care about, but I was ready. I was like, I could have sold my flashes, you know what I mean? I was like, well, this is over, but whatever. Like, I had fun, and I'm not mad because I know the people I care about, like, care about me. That's the confusing part in skating. It's like, especially working with it, you're, like, lost. You know, it's still a job, and you have, like, work friends and stuff like that. So it's, like, confusing because you travel the world with people, and you're not necessarily, like, best friends with everybody, you know? So it's just, like, a bizarre, I don't know. Once you find your, like, support group, you're like, oh, I could, like, quit and feel good and move on and not feel like I was pushed out. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I don't remember how, but I did the interview in Chris's parents' basement in Cedar Falls in Iowa. It was so random. And I didn't think anything of it. Like, literally didn't. I did the interview. We were just rambling, and Chris's dad was like yelling because they were gonna go get food, and I was like, "Hold on,
Mr.
Like,
Vanderwall,
I'm like, Ian, dude,
yeah, gotta, I want to come eat."
Yeah, I'm like, we gotta like wrap this up, and like Ian is probably tripping, like, dude, what is happening? Like, you're just saying all this shit. Like, we have to keep talking. And so I think I was like, I'll meet you guys there. Or I don't even know. And then he was like, dude, it's really good. And I was like, whatever. I genuinely like don't care. I just want it to be kind of over with. You know what I mean? And then he put it out and it like fucking was insane. I just did not think, I genuinely did not think anything of it. I thought I would get like 5 texts that were like, wow, cool, man. Good job. And like people would just be like, right on. I don't know. I don't know what I was thinking. I think it was just like, well, that's over with, you know,
without expecting.
Yeah. Well, it was 2014. It was 2014. And I feel like at that time, I don't think there was anybody in like any guys in skateboarding that were out. It, like BA came out in 2017. And I think that like it was probably understood that a lot of the women skaters were gay, maybe, but it just like wasn't talked about. So like, it was a pretty big deal. So it's not like a surprise to me that you would have gotten a big reaction.
Yeah. And I don't, maybe because I was like out to a bunch of people and like I knew about Brian and like maybe, you know, it's very common for a lot of like queer people to kind of live those double lives. But it, I don't know why. I just didn't think anything of it. And then, yeah, it was like psycho. My phone like broke. Like I couldn't use my phone because it was like, I think before iMessage, or maybe there was iMessage on a computer and I didn't like have it set up, but like I was getting so many texts, like my phone like froze, and then I would turn it on and then it would like quadruple vibrate a bunch and then like freeze again. And then like, I didn't even read the text. I'm like, why is my phone like breaking? And then I think Cuddy, my like best friend Chris, who I grew up with, like we lived together in LA, said something of like, dude, this interview is like all over Instagram. I was like, what are you talking about? My phone won't even fucking work, you know? It was so weird. And what was ultra weird was like, there's all these people that like I wanted to be friends with, or people I wanted to work with, or like, and you know, like no shade, everyone's busy, blah, blah, blah. But like, there's a lot of people I like had reached out to that didn't respond, or like I'd want to work with or shoot with. And then like they like reposted it and now we're like friends. You know what I mean? But it was just so trippy. Dude, we were at like one, I was at like Street League 1 year and like Tim O'Connor was there and he was just like making fun of everyone, like being Tim O'Connor. And it was like funny. And I'm like, oh man, like I really don't want to deal with, like, I wasn't there yet. Like, it was so raw, because I don't know. Like, I'm a pretty fairly private person. It's one thing to be like, here's pictures and stuff like that. But, like, letting everyone into, like, your personal life is really weird. And so I was just like, oh, man, he's just going to, like, roast me. And I'm feeling really weird. Like, everyone knows this crazy secret about me. And he was, like, making fun of everyone around this bar. And then he gets to me and he was like, oh, I know you, dude. And he like, I forget what he said, but he was like, mad respect. That was sick. And I was like, oh, thanks. And he's like, yeah, man, that was really inspiring. And I was like, okay. And then he like turned and made fun of like one of the waiters or something like that. And I was just like, wait, what just happened? It was like so surreal for like months after that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine that it was pretty inspiring for a lot of people out there, and, you know, maybe even Brian Anderson. Like I feel like you probably opened some doors, but it also seems like you opened a lot of doors for yourself. Like, do you think that that was like a turning point in your career?
Oh, for sure. Also, because it's like, and I've talked with Brian about it, where like, dude, it just like frees you, you know? Like you just start to realize, like, you know, like I've talked with people that I've reached out about working with and like made jokes like, you know, I always wanted to work with you and blah, 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 blah. And then they'd be like, dude, you'd write me like a weird email that was confusing and was like, maybe if you're not too busy and you have an assignment no one wants to do, think of me. And it was just like, I don't know what this kid wants. And then like, I think there's just so much of you that like, it's weird, like, half of you wants to like destroy yourself because you're like,
so in your head about everything, you know what I mean? And then the other half is like fighting to like preserve you, and it just becomes this like internal thing, and it's like exhausting. And so I feel like everyone's running, you know, on like, you're just like frazzled and confused, and like you're not able to like operate right, you know, because you just don't, you don't even think you like deserve to sit at the table. So you're just kind of always sitting there like, I don't know, maybe like if you're not too busy, like I could like maybe take a picture or something. And so I think coming out was like, I felt like I got like a good night of sleep, you know, where you're just on and you're like, have the perfect cup of coffee or whatever. And you're like, I don't feel like anything. I'm just here, you know? And you're like, I can think clearly, and I don't have to like say, oh, my friend's calling, or I don't have to like, you know, people used to be like, what'd you do last night? And, you know, so much of my brain power was like coming up with fake scenarios, like on the spot, that you would just be like, oh, I went to like Akbar, this gay bar down the street. And they'd be like, how was it? And you're like, it was fun. And you're like, wait, why am I like relaxed? You know what I mean? Like, I'm so used to that being such a tense exchange that it just like freed up. So I think that's what people talk about when it's like, you know, coming out just makes you happier, because it just like frees your brain from like thinking of 8 trillion things at once and like analyzing every single word you say or move you make. And it just helped me focus on like creating stuff and like pitching ideas and being in an office and not feeling like awkward, you know what I mean? And like people would be like, dude, it's cool, like you seem present. And you're like, well, what the fuck was I like? You know, I don't know if that makes any sense. And so it just was kind of like freeing in those regards, you know, which was like so sick. It's like really, really cool.
Yeah. Along those lines, what type of stuff are you shooting these days? Like skate, editorial, commercial?
Honestly, I'm down to shoot skating. It's tough. There's not like a lot of outlets. So I'll still shoot stuff now and again. If there's like something cool or like someone I'd love to work on an interview
when
with.
When was the last time you like truly laid in a gutter for an angle? Because I know you used to love that.
Laid in a gut. I mean, shit. I weirdly just did on Monday. Shoot. It was not for skating.
Never mind.
Yeah, I know. Laid in the gutter. Oh, I did for okay. Leo. But see, it's like, I don't know. Like, that stuff's fun. It's different. Because it's like, I feel my life's the opposite, which is really cool. Where it's like, I used to have to shoot skating to, like, survive. And now I'm like shooting other stuff and I can just go skate and like I can go shoot stuff if that's what I want to mm-hmm. shoot, if that makes sense. So like, I don't even care if people land stuff. Like, I think me and Leo went shooting once and I just started like throwing his board everywhere. And I was like, your board is noisy and it's like annoying me. I don't even want to be here. And he was like dying. Like, I want to do the trick. And I was like, I don't care. Like, let's go. This is stupid. But it's like, skating's fun. There's like an adventure to it. You know, you don't like, there's like a mission out to some bump by a graveyard, or like, you know, we were like waiting till sunset to shoot a photo. And I still love that. But now, honestly, I like sold my soul. I just want to make like, there's so much money in like advertising stuff. And I'm like, I want every dime of that money. And I want to buy like a cunty big ass house and have a yard and a big garden. Not necessarily in LA. I don't think you can make that much money. Well, some people can, but have a dog and then just do fun stuff on the side. I still do like editorial stuff, because editorial outside of skating is kind of similar. It's like there's not really budgets and you kind of do it. But most of the stuff now is commercial. It's some form of advertising for some branded content direct to the brand agency, something like that, if that makes sense.
Setting up in a studio, does that come in from like, you know, shooting shit in the streets? Does that just feel luxurious, or is it just kind of different setting for the job, or how does that compare?
Dude, it's insanity. Like the whole, I did this shoot recently and I directed it, and it was with all the, like a CEO, a CFO, CMO, like all the C people
And like, they, none of them are like, I mean, they're all like camera trained for like the news and stuff, but we were doing like sort of a commercial, and there was like, you know, they're all like incredibly successful, really, really good at what they do. Everyone's really, really busy. And the whole time, like, definitely a lot of personalities and a lot of personality in everybody. But I was like, this is like so chill compared to dealing with skaters. It's insane. Like, skaters are definitely the best. Navigating them is the best, like, practice for anything else. Like, dude, like, pretty wild celebrities are chiller sometimes than skaters. You know what I mean? It's like such a different world. And yeah, like, it's still to this day, like, on Monday I had a shoot, I was like laying in the curb and I'm like looking over my shoulder like, are we gonna get kicked out? Like, we should probably go. But then you're like, no, we can just sit here forever, you know what I mean? So it does, I think every skate photographer that moves on, it never leaves you. Where also, I don't, if I'm doing like a big studio shoot, like, I don't really touch much. Like, someone, like, they have a budget to like hire a lighting person, and I'll just be like, it should be brighter, and then someone like makes it brighter, and then, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's insane. Some days you're like, what am I even doing? Do you know what I mean? Compared to like setting up like four Lumadyne's in like 2 seconds before someone does a trick and you get like arrested.
What trip was it?
Right, like, as a skate photographer.
Yeah, real quick. Oh. What trip was it where you refused to, you were wearing, I think it was a white girl shirt. There was a lot of gutter lane. Maybe it was Brian Heck for that, the skateboard mag, product of the environment, I want to say, when we were up in Bismarck. But like, you didn't change your shirt the entire trip because you were like very superstitious about it. That the whole, yeah, I think that had to have been Heck, because you were worried if you changed your shirt and was filthy by the end. You were worried if you change your shirt, the whole thing would fall apart. Like, Heck would dip, or, you know, he'd just disappear.
Yeah, because, like, I don't think he even acknowledged we were there for 2 days. Like, chasing skaters was, like, next. I have so many insane stories. Like, I don't even know where to begin, of just, like, nuts journeys. And I would always get superstitious like that. And now, yeah, it's, like, the model's there. Or, like, there's definitely egos and talent and stuff like that, but it's not to that level of like, dude, I've been on trips where like they didn't show up. Like, we flew somewhere and like two people just did not show, didn't answer their phone, didn't even acknowledge that they weren't there. They just didn't go on the trip. And you're like, are you okay? And you'd like, eventually I'd like text their girlfriend, like, is he okay? Yeah, he just didn't feel like going. Oh, okay. Right on. You know, so yeah, the outside skating definitely prepares you. I will say this, and I've talked to other skate photographers and filmers that go commercial. It does get really boring because, like, everything's planned out. And, like, skating, you know, all the images you love, all the videos you love, not a ton of that is, like, scripted. You know, it's just, like, all of Ty's footage, someone's just, like, lighting something on fire because you're bored in a parking lot in the middle of like Wyoming, and you're like, what else would we do, you know? And it just creates such this energy that like you can't like produce. So I always have to dial it back, like if I'm on set or something, because I'll be like, I want there to be more chaos to bring like some energy, you know what I mean? Like something. And you just have to like cage that little dragon so you don't like make some crazy work.
Were you wondering about Templeton?
Yeah.
I was just saying, like, I understand how it's like, or like as a skate photographer or filmer or whatever, it's like everything is on you. Like, you're the producer, you're the lighting guy, you're the camera guy, you're like, you know, maybe you've got some snacks in your bags, your craft services, like you're doing everything to get the shot. Whereas when you're on set on a professional thing, it's like, there's, you know, you can just say out loud like, I'm thirsty, and then like a water bottle is gonna come in like out of nowhere. Yeah, it's just a crazy different thing. And I think like with skating, it's like, you, if you go on tour, it's like you're on a shoot for 2 weeks, and you just can't do that with like a model for an Adidas running thing. That's just like such a different world.
Oh yeah, then also like you're on a trip for 2 weeks, you are sharing a room with somebody, ideally you know, I usually tried to work in-house or would try to go like Red Bull stuff on tour for like 2 weeks, and you also have to room with somebody. So it's like on commercial stuff, you have like your own hotel room, where skate trip, it's like you have these long ass days. And then like, dude, like one trip I was rooming with Grayson Fletcher, which is still one of my favorite like pairings of all time. And I was like, no, I literally in my head was like, I hate this. This is so insane. And it was just one of those, like, we were the two odd men out, like, that didn't really know, I think, other people. And it just kind of happened. And I feel like he also probably looked at me and was like, I don't want to room with him either. And we're in Germany, tiny, like, dude, our beds are like touching. And I was just like, I was like, all right, Grayson, look, like, I don't like parties. I'm down. If you want to go out till 8 in the morning, let's go. Not in the room. Like, I need to have all my panic attacks and like anxiety attacks, and I need to like charge my batteries, and I have all this equipment. These walls are like a safe space. You know what I mean? And he's like, cool. I think it was like his first flip trip. And he's like, cool, totally, I get it. And I'm like, please, like, don't bring a bunch of beer back. I don't want the room to smell like shit. Like, obviously live your life, but like, can we please just have this be a sanctuary? And he's like, all right, yeah. And like, classically, like, I go out that night till like 5 in the morning, and I come back and I can fucking hear like music blasting into the hallway. Like, it's so loud. I can hear it. And I was like, this motherfucker, like, I'm so annoyed. And I open it, and his music in his headphones is so loud that you, and it's like metal, like double bass, like, and I'm like, bro, what? And he's like snoring. And I'm sitting there like laying in bed, just like, how, like, I can't even think, this is so loud. Like, what do I do? And like, we had shot all day, then I went out all night. I think we had to leave at like 9 in the morning. And I'm just like, dude, this is so chaotic. And so like, I turned it down just to the level that like, it was still really loud in his headphones, but I couldn't hear it. And so then we wake up in the morning, and he was so nice. He was like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, hey, we gotta go. And he's like, okay, cool, cool. And I was like, dude, do you like always listen to music that loud? And he was like, oh fuck, dude, sorry, was it bugging you? And I'm like, no, it's just like, what the fuck, like, what? And he's like, oh, I forget if his dad was in a band or like whatever it was, but that music like soothes him. So the whole trip, every night, God love him, metal music like blasting at so loud. And it's like both funny and maddening that you like, you know, you're on tour 2 weeks, you have these long days, and then you like share a space. So it's definitely like you have to want to be there to enjoy it, if that makes sense. Like, otherwise you'll go crazy, where the commercial stuff, it's like you shoot, you do other stuff, and then you go back to your nice hotel room and you just like sit in silence, which is cool, but I don't know.
Yeah, different vibe.
Yeah, as I get older, I'm like, I want quiet. But when you're younger, it's like, maybe you should fall asleep to metal music, you know?
Yeah, I want to get behind the scenes on some of these photos. The probably one of my favorite Sam photos. I'm going to say my second favorite Sam photo is the Leo Baker with the rainbow
cover of the book.
How did that one come about? Yeah, cover of the book.
That one, there's been like a bunch of different, like, dude, there was something recently that was like a smoke flag. I had seen like a smoke flag done like on the, like, some art exhibits or like in commercials or something. They were always like one color, you know what I mean? And like, I was like, oh, it could be cool if you could do like a rainbow flag out of those and you could like skate with it. But the ones like I had seen, it was like someone had done like, they shot like paint, like spray paint cans with like a BB gun, and that like sprayed and made this thing on the floor. And another one, someone made like a contraption that like pushed down on all of them at once, and none of that was like feasible skating, obviously. And then I found these like flares, they're like paintball flares, are kind of technically illegal in the US, but there's a company called Enola Gay, strangely enough, that makes them. They're like, you know, when you get hit, or I think if you win in paintball, you like pull them, and it's like a flare, but like a really strong colored flare. And I wanted to shoot it with Brian, actually,
And then my friend John, Leo is weirdly working for my friend John, and Leo just won Street League. And John was like, "Oh, have you heard of this skater Leo? Like, Leo's working for me doing like graphic design." And I was like, "Oh, I didn't know that Leo was transitioning." So I was like, "Oh no, I don't know. Like, I'm down to meet them. Like, I don't know who Leo is though." And then, like, kind of did some Googling and was like, "Oh shit, that's super cool." And so I think it was literally like the day or really close to when I was gonna talk to Brian about it. And I was like, okay, wait, maybe I'm gonna hold off because, like, if Leo's down, I definitely think it'd be cool if, like, a trans, like, I thought in my head he was like openly trans because my friend John was like talking about it so openly. And I was like, it'd be really sick if a trans person did this. And so we had breakfast and it kind of came to be that, like, we didn't talk in detail, but I was like, oh, you haven't like fully done this yet, and that would be so much sicker if you did this picture, because it would be like a cool picture, but then, like, when you do this, it'll kind of like come around full circle again, do you know what I mean? And like be sick again. And I'm not that good at like explaining that stuff, but I was like, that'd be amazing. And then there was the Pulse Club shooting, and one of Leo's friends was at the club that night, and I had told him, like, oh, I really want to do a fundraiser for this shooting that happened. It's fucking horrible and insane, and I can't, you know, I feel bad not being able to do much, but like we could do this photo and sell prints and raise some money, and that would be really cool. And so I ordered those flares. I had to like order them off eBay from some guy in like New Jersey who was like, hey, I have to send these like ground shipping because they can't get scanned because they're technically illegal and they have like explosives in them. And I was like, okay, can you send them to my friend in New York because I have to like fly to New York and I definitely won't be able to fly with those. So then, like, yeah, Chris's brother Tom made like a wand out of like PVC and we like spray painted it gray, I think. I don't know. It was like very that, and we were like, okay, we'll just like stick these flares in and we'll rip them off like one at a time, and then I guess he'll skate. And it was like, okay, like let's just try. And I think it was like between skating down like Fifth Avenue in New York, holding it like something really city like, but then we were like, maybe the colors won't show up. And so Leo knew of this like white wall or a brick wall, I forget, I should know, but it's like at a Staples, like right off the BQE, which is like a highway that goes through Brooklyn. And we were like, I guess we'll just like pull like six flares and like do this. And it was like right before we did it, I think like my friend Tombo came and filmed because I was like, should we film this? Like, maybe it's cool. And he's like, no, that'd be really cool. And like, classic me, I just was like, wait. This is a lot of pressure on Leo, who's like not totally out and like maybe doesn't want to do it. And I'm like, do you want to do this? And he's like, I'm down, but let's like make it quick. And I was like, okay, shit. All right, let's make this quick. And like pulled all the flares. And I think at that moment, it was like, you know, it was like a proper flare. Like you pull it and like smoke, like fire came out for a second and then it was smoke. And it was like a lot of smoke. And like we're in New York City and it's like, pouring. I mean, there's six of them. They're like, it's colored smoke, but when it all mixes, it's like brown. And then there's like, it's going all over the freeway. It was just way more intense than like I imagined. And you could tell Leo was like, dude, really? And I'm like, okay, like, let's just skate back and forth. And like, the whole street was like freaking out. And I was like, whoa, this is such a nightmare. And the first one, like, the yellow flare just stopped like midway through. And so we were like, I was just like, oh, okay, cool. That was like a cool test. And Leo's like, I mean, are we gonna do another one? And I'm like, let's just do one more because like I didn't really get a good photo. And then we did another one and like it still wasn't going that well. And I was like, man, this sucks. And then you could tell he like someone was yelling at us. And I was like, let's just do like one more. The smoke's like really good right now. And he pushed down the street and like the wind kind of like gently went down the street, and like all the other ones, like the smoke, like mixed together to make this like purple brown haze. And that one, like it blew and like separated them really nicely. I think that's truly like the only frame that was like usable. And like the push was perfect. Like everything, like it isn't photo, like there's a little bit of it like that is photoshopped just to like clean up some of the colors, like the towards the end of it. But that was like all how it kind of went down. And then all these people were like yelling and freaking out. And we were like, let's just fucking get the fuck out of here. And we like skated down the street. And then I was like, whoa. And Tom was like, dude, that's crazy. Like, those are like dynamite sticks. And I'm like, yeah. And he's just like, dude, those are probably like so fucking illegal. And I was like, yeah, no, I know. And Leo was like, dude, those are like for sure. We're in New York City. And like, you have 10 like illegal dynamites that you just like set off essentially. And I just was like, yeah, I did kind of think of that like at one point, but we were like too, I don't know. It's one of those things that you're like, don't overthink it. But thankfully, like nothing happened because it probably could have been really bad. Like, yeah. So that was kind of it. And that was another thing that I just did not think was going to go the way it went. And like, I set up this store too. It was like so rigged, you know, it was like order a print and I'll print it and then send it to you. And like, I was like on, I think I like rented my apartment out for the summer and I was like out on the road, just like taking assignments. And, you know, I was like at my friend Ann's house, like just crashing and posted it. And it was like hundreds of orders like right away. And I was like, oh fuck, that's a lot. Like, what do I do? Like, I need to go, I think I had to go to Vegas the next day for like an assignment. And then like the next day was like hundreds more, you know what I mean? And I'm like, what? And it just like did not stop forever. I finally like took the store down because I just was like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't know how to syndicate this. And you know what I mean? It was just like me. And then some people like reached out and they're like, oh, you know, would you want to license this? And I just was like, I mean, we just wanted to raise money. You know what I mean?
Did it end up in a Nike commercial or something? Or did they like do their version of it or something?
It did. Tom's footage ended up in a Nike commercial.
Okay, yeah.
Which was really funny. I think for like the Final Four or something like that.
Yeah, it was like a big deal. Like one of those ones with like all the marquee Nike athletes, I feel like.
It was, it's always, I never know how much I can or should say. And I totally get, I get every side. I did pitch it to some people and, you know, understandably, like it's a random idea, but there were some people I pitched it to that ended up sort of using and paying for it a lot more than if they had just funded it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which was funny, but it's, that's like the hindsight is 50-50 or 20-20 or whatever the fuck that saying is. But like, yeah, it ended up, the funny part is like, I was on a Nike trip. It's like around this time, especially, it's like every PDF, it's like the image, you know what I mean? For every Pride campaign, like I'll even get sent stuff like, hey, we're going to do a Pride campaign. Do you want to pitch on it? And it's like, that's the opening photo. It's like, here we are. And I was even on a Nike shoot and like one of the people on the shoot was like laying out a deck and that was like the photo. And I just was like, and Alyssa was like, there it is. And I was like, and there it fucking is.
So like gorilla photo with illegal explosives in New York City to shooting Nicolas Cage for the cover of Empire magazine. What was that like?
That's it. Dude, that one was exactly, that one is as cool as you think it was. He's like the coolest person ever. Everything you think that he is, he's like he's that. It was like very last editorial stuff can literally be like, hey, can you do this tomorrow, you know what I mean? So it's just kind of chaotic. But I think, yeah, it was like, hey, do you want to go to Vegas to shoot Nick Cage? And you're like, obviously, that's the most random. And we go and we pulled up and like, dude, his like garage was just open. We like drive by and the photo editor was like, oh, he's into cars. I think this is his house. And I'm like,
Yeah, he's just, I don't know cars that well, but I'm like, is that an expensive car? And the writer knows like some cars, and they're like, yeah, that's a really expensive car. And I'm like, so cool. The garage door is just chilling open. And a lot of times when you shoot celebrities, they have like PR people or handlers or, you know, someone that is sometimes like you don't totally speak like directly to them. Like, you know, you kind of talk to someone who sort of navigates a conversation with them or on behalf of them. And I'm like, okay, there's going to be a whole briefing on what we can do, what we can shoot, what we can say. I mean, it's Nick Cage. Like, he's probably one of the most famous people like in the world. You know what I mean? And he just answers the door, and he's got a pot of coffee in his hands. He's like half shaven. He's in a suit. And he's like, come in, come in, come in. Don't sit outside. Don't sit outside. Come in. Don't be a stranger. And I'm like, hi. Hi, Nick. I'm Sam. And, you know, everyone's like introducing themselves. And it's so bizarre. You're like, okay. And he's like, do you want any coffee? And I was like, no, I don't drink coffee. And he's like, you don't drink coffee? That's pretty cool. And I was like, thanks. And he's like, do you guys want coffee? And they're like, no, we're good. And he's like, sorry, I'm still shaving. I'm like running a bit behind. My groomer's gonna come and finish like shaving the rest of me. Make yourself at home. Like, whatever you want to shoot, like, go ahead and walk around. Dude, there's like pets. He has so many animals, like aquariums and terrariums, and like, there's cats, like giant cats walking around. There's a fucking crow, like, in the middle of his living room in a
Whoa.
cage that's like cawing. The walls are like, it's just like so epically like bizarre. His stairs go in like a spiral, and they're like the stars, like from the flag. You know, it's like such a trippy house. And he's just got like so much cool shit everywhere. Like, you forget, you know, like, and it's so dumb, but like, you forget that these people are like, I mean, they're wildly famous, but like at the end of the interview, he picked up a picture and he just was like, man, that was a fun day. And it was just like an old, like a disposable camera photo of him and Sean Connery on Alcatraz. And he's like, dude, we like filmed all day. I love Sean Connery. He's so cool. That was so fun. And you're like, yeah, that's like actually a memory that you
Shooting the film The
have, you know what I
Rock.
mean? Right. And then there's another one. He's like playing the trumpet, and I forget, it was some really famous jazz, like iconic jazz musician. I forget their name. He was like, this was a fun day too. I was on the Johnny Carson show just playing trumpet with like Lou Reed or somebody. I don't remember who. And you're like, yeah, if I did that, I would have pictures of that. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like so trippy. The level of these memories are like next level. We just like walked around the house and like would pick a place, and you know, he's like, oh, should I like change into my outfit from Easy Rider? And he goes and puts on like the leather jacket and everything from that movie. And you're like, yeah, that you, why wouldn't you just have that like at your house? You were in the movie, you know what I mean? And then like we go in back, and he loves animals, and he's got like a pig in back. And I was like, oh, pigs are so fun. Like, I grew up in Iowa. And he's like, oh, that's so cool. I love pigs. And he's like, don't photograph the pig. And I was like, oh, it's okay. We'll like shoot this way. And I was just like, so can I ask you? I'm like, I don't even know if I can ask you this. So like, you don't have to answer, but like, have you seen his movie
I'm not.
Pig? It's so good. But he literally, it's a movie about a truffle sniffing pig, because that's how they find like truffle mushrooms. And he's like this really crazy, like Portland restaurateur who like has this truffle pig, and someone like steals it to try to like outdo him. So he like kills everyone trying to find his pig. And I'm just like, so do you just like do that off this pig? And he was like, yeah. And I'm like, it's the sickest shit ever. Like, you're just sitting there chilling with your pig, and you write a movie that you can star in about this pig that you love so much that you'll kill people to like save its life. That's like such a sick, like, it was insane. And then I think we had like 2 hours. That's like a weird part with some editorial stuff. Like, sometimes you only, that 2 hours was way longer than I thought we would. Like, sometimes you only have like 10 minutes or 30 minutes. And then, yeah, like, dude, he was sick. And then, like, at the end of it, it was like, okay, I think we got everything. And he was like, oh, are you guys gonna go? And it was like, yeah. And it was all, had this vibe of like, you don't have to. And I was like looking at the photo editor, like, come on, let's stay. Like, let's just kick it with Nicolas Cage. And she's like, no, we should go. Like, the publicist was really cool. They like let us come like without even being here. Dude, we didn't sign any NDAs. We just like went in his house and hung out with him for 2 hours and then left. It was such a fever dream. And I have photos of him, like, he like walked in and like held his crow. He's like sitting in his living room with like a leather jacket, like holding this crow. And he's like, watch out, it might attack you. And I'm like, that's all good. I'm down for that story. And then we take all these pictures and he's like, can you not print those or put those anywhere? And I was like, no, yeah, that's fine. And they're like, it's just literally Nicolas Cage holding a crow like in his living room. It's like the sickest photo, which can't see the light of day, but it was just like, whoa, that was, he was so nice. He was so cool. He's like so quirky, but in like, he's, dude, this is it. I feel like everyone's obsessed with him because like there's a part of you that can't tell if he's acting. Do you know what I mean? Like, and sometimes you almost feel like he's actually in the movie, if that makes sense. And like hanging out with him was the same feeling where you're like, this is so trippy because I feel like you're in this insane, and this is gonna sound so dumb, but it's almost like he got briefed on me and the crew and he was playing a role of being photographed. It's like he's always acting but like never acting. It was so trippy and like iconic, you know what I mean? It was just like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, it makes you wonder like, what is the real Nicolas Cage, or is there a real Nicolas Cage, or is he always putting on a show?
So pure. He's like one of those, you know, the memes where they're like, protect this person at all costs. Like, for that was him to a T. Like, people fuck with him. Like, he has all these crazy collectibles. And like the cut, one of the covers, he's sitting in like, I think, the world's biggest geode that he got like shipped from Peru, and he wants like the Natural History Museum to have it because he like loves rocks and nature. He has all these like, you know, sort of rare reptiles and stuff like that. But he's been like, he collects comics and all these like things, and people have like, it's, I think it was for a bit, it was like this goal to like steal things from him, and he would get like broken into and people would rob like the original Batman or something like that. And he's definitely gotten like, he lost a lot of money, I think, on some like really weird, he seems like he trusts people and then got burned like super bad. And he just like, he's just like pure, I don't know, you know what I mean, where you're like, oh, I could definitely see people taking advantage of you, sadly, and it's like so fucked up that they do, because you're like, god, you just seem like such a genuine like nice person.
Totally. I feel like we should wrap this up. Do you guys have any last questions, Jason? Well, and Mike,
yeah, I just want to say I definitely appreciate the number of photos involving cigs in your book. I'm a big fan of cigarettes and how cool they are.
Yeah, that was a note whenever I would try to get out of like to get into commercial work. Literally, everyone was like, why is everyone smoking? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, skaters love smoking, and they always are smoking, and they do make for cool photos.
Absolutely. Gosh, I'd be like kind of stoked if I hadn't quit and really don't want to smoke anymore. But
nostalgic.
Yeah, I would definitely be stoked to have some cool smoking photos of myself, but I never smoked. Which brings us to the end of our show, where we talk about what we're stoked on. Sam, what are you stoked on this week?
I'm stoked on two things, if I can be so greedy. One, I just got a PS5 and I've been playing Fortnite with my neighbor, and that's been really fun. And the second thing is, I think they're called Scrub Daddy. The like sponges. I don't know if you guys have heard of them, but they're so sick. Dude, they're the best. And they're called Scrub Daddy. I mean, how can you not be psyched on that?
It'll be linked in the show notes. Yes. Jason, what are you stoked on this week?
Stoked on Venture Trucks out of San Francisco, California. Stoked on a couple podcast episodes from our colleagues over at The Bunt and The Nine Club. The most recent episode of The Bunt with Kevin Bradley is amazing. not even all the way through, and it's already like an all-timer. Of course, stoked on the Joey Suriel episode of the Nine Club as a big Menace fan, and stoked on a new X-Men animated series called X-Men 97. If you remember the one from the 90s, or you're just like a fan of the X-Men, it's like, it's fucking awesome.
I'm stoked on the NBA playoffs starting this weekend. Go Wolves, beat the Suns. I'm also stoked on learning about Beaver Island, which is, it's part of the state of Michigan, and it's in the northern section of Lake Michigan. And it's a crazy story, to quote Wikipedia. Until 1856, Beaver Island was home to a unique American political and religious experiment. A Mormon theocracy and monarchy ruled by King James Strang, who unsuccessfully challenged Brigham Young for the post-Joseph Smith leadership of Mormonism. His people were called the Strangites, and they were accused of piracy and other crimes, and that all happened until James Strang was assassinated and driven, and then like his followers were driven off the island by Irish Catholic fishermen who had previously lived there. So, I don't know. I was like looking at islands on Google Earth and then read the Wikipedia one about that, and just tripped on that story. It'll be linked in the show notes. Templeton, what are you stoked on this week?
I'm stoked on new spots near me. Spotted some new construction and checked it out. And there are two different ledge spots at this place. So very excited to check those out on Sunday. Also happening Sunday, I'm going to be seeing the GZA. Saw the entire Wu-Tang Clan a couple months back, and it was amazing. So really excited to see GZA this Sunday. That's it for our show this week. Be sure to check out mostlyskateboarding.net for links to the things that we talked about and other show notes. Until next time, you can keep up with us all week online. Sam, where can the people find you?
Online, on my website, at just my name, SamuelMaguire.com.
Where can they buy the
or
book?
Samuel. Yeah, you can buy the book at paragon-books.com.
And of course, it'll be linked in the show notes. Jason, where can the people find you?
On the Twitter, at Carbonite 1994, on Instagram at Frozen and Carbonite, and writing stuff for quartersnacks.com. Mike, where can the people find you?
I'm on social media at M Munzenreiter. Thanks for coming on, Sam. And Templeton, where can the it was a long time coming for us ex the skateboard Meg guys. Templeton, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Mostly Skateboarding and on Twitter at Mostly Skate.
Thanks again, Sam.
We'll see you guys next week.
Later.
The only man a whole wait for is the sky blue Bally kid in 83 Rock Taylors. My Memorex perform tape decks, my own phone sex. Watch out for Haiti bitches, I heard they throw hex. Yo, Wuho platoon is filled with raccoons. Corner sitting wine, niggas sipping apple boom. This ain't a white cartoon, cause I be ducking crazy space. The kid hold white shit like Black's rock, ashy legs. Why is the sky blue? Why is water wet? Why did Judas rat the Romans while Jesus slept? Stand up, you're out of luck like two dogs stuck. Iron Man be sipping rum out of Stanley cups. Unflammable, Noriega, aiming nozzles. Stay windy in Chicago, spine tingle, mind boggles. Kangos and rainbow colors, promoters try to hold dough. Give me mine before Poe, wrap you up in so-and-so. I ran the dark ages, Constantine the Great, Henry the Eighth, built with Genghis Kong and red suede while he dawned.
I judge wisely, as if nothing ever surprised me. Lounging between two pillars of ivory, I'm lively. My dome piece is like building stones in Greece. My poems are deep, from ancient thrones I speak. I'm overwhelmed as my mind roams the realm. My eyes the visions, memory is the film. Others act subtile, but they fragile above cloud. They act wild and couldn't budge a crowd. No matter how loud they get, though they growl and spit, clutch their fists and throw up signs like a crip, and throw all types of fit. I leave them split like ass cheeks and rag pussy.
Hey yo, camouflage chameleon, ninja skill in your building. No time to grab the gun, they already got your wife and children. A hit was sent from the president to raid your residence, because you had secret evidence and documents on how they raped the continents. Enlist the prominent, dominant Islamic, Asiatic, black Hebrew, the year 2002. The battle's still with the wolves. 6 million devils just died from the bubonic flow. All of the Ebola virus, under the reign of King Cyrus. You can see the weakness of a man right through his iris. Unlawed use snakes get thrown in boiling lakes of hot oil. Uncoils your skin, chicken heads getting slim like olive oil. Only plant the seed deep inside fertile soil. Fortified with essential vitamin and minerals. Use the sky for blanket, stuff a cloud inside my pillow. Rolling with the lamb, 12 tribes, 144,000 chosen. Protons, electrons always cause explosions.
The banks are G, all cream down to back. Money feet good, opposites off the set. It ain't hard to see, my C's need guard degree. I got mouths to feed, unnecessary beef is more cows to breed. I'm on some tax-free shit by any means, whether bound to hit scheme or some counterfeit cream. I learned much from such swift cons to run scams. Veterans got the game spiced like ham, and from that, sons are born and guns are drawn. Clips are fully loaded, and then blood floods the lawn. Disciplinary action was a fraction of strength that made me truncate the length one tenth. With the stump, tweeters hiss like air pumps. RZA shaped the track, niggas caught razor bumps. Scar trying to figure who invented this unprecedented opium scented, dark tinted. Now watch me blow him out of shoes without clues, cause I won't hesitate to detonate on short fuse.